From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. We're continuing our reporter roundtable today. Our panel includes Kevin Richer, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, Audrey Dutton, senior investigative reporter with the Idaho Capital Sun, and Nate Sunderland, managing editor of EastIdahoNews.com. If you listened to our first segment, you know we were talking about gun safety, gun violence in the U.S., but in particular here in Idaho. And Idaho is not immune to school shootings. In fact, just over a year ago, on May 6th of 2021, a shooting at Rigby Middle School in eastern Idaho injured two students and a staff member. And Nate, you've been following this story from the beginning. There is new information coming out now. Can you talk to us about that? Because certain documents have been unsealed, correct?
It's true. We've been in a legal battle with Jefferson County for about 8 months now. Over this school shooting and where this 12-year-old girl shot these two students and a custodian. And we had a victory just last week. A judge decided to unseal court records that showed the outcome of the case. And that's something that we've been looking for because we, based on previous victories, we had known kind of what had happened that day, but we had never known what had happened to the girl. What was the outcome of the case? Mm-hmm. So what we found out was that the juvenile shooter was charged with three counts of attempted first degree murder, and she pleaded guilty to all of those charges.
So Nate, at this point, I mean, Nate, she was 13, correct, at the time of this?
She was 12 guilty, at the time.
She was 12. So now that she's, you know, that she's pleaded guilty, I mean, do we know what has happened to
we do actually. She's been committed to the Idaho Department of Juvenile Corrections until she's 19. And what's interesting about this case is that it was going to be tried in the prosecutor was going to really, he was trying to get it tried in adult court, but he realized that given the law that no matter if he tried it in juvenile court or adult court, she was going to get out in when she was a young adult. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to keep the case in juvenile corrections because they have a greater focus on rehabilitation. And I appreciated that because we don't talk about that much. We don't talk about rehabilitating the shooter. We talk about gun laws and we talk about the aftermath, but we don't talk about these young kids who are also victims, even though they've done horrible things. And so I was very impressed with the prosecutor that he put so much thought into how we could rehabilitate the shooter. Mm-hmm. And that's why he decided to keep her in the Department of Juvenile Corrections.
And I know that you will have more on this, I believe, coming out next week. So we'll look forward to that article. With that said, Kevin, in light of this tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, I think the majority of parents, myself included, are I am concerned about my children's safety every single day when I drop them off at school. I am more concerned now. What do we know in regards to school safety here in Idaho? I mean, as we just talked about, we are not immune to this. There has been a school shooting in Idaho, and it's probably not going to be the only one.
Right. The Rigby case really does show that this can happen anywhere. And everybody says that, but it's true. You know, no community is immune to this. I wonder how or if this is going to affect the debate about school safety and school security in Idaho, or if we're going to be in kind of this rinse and repeat mode in terms of school security. I mean, the basics of our policies right now about firearms in school is that a school board or a charter school can decide whether to allow staff members to carry weapons in school. And there have been attempts, there have been bills that have tried to loosen that even further, to make those laws even more permissive. Those bills have not passed. And the sponsor of those bills, Chad Christensen, a representative from Eastern Idaho, lost in last week's primary. So I'm not sure who or if anybody is going to bring up similar legislation in 2023. I guess I wonder, and I think a lot of people are wondering this around the country, is this shooting, is this an inflection point, or is this another chapter in a really horrible story, a really horrible narrative that we've just seen unfold time and time again in communities and all across the country?
It's a uniquely American situation. And, you know, Kevin, I think that so many of us thought that Sandy Hook would be that turning point, right? When you had 6 and 7 year olds that were gunned down in a classroom, and that wasn't the turning point, because here we are almost a decade later and a classroom of 9 and 10 year olds were killed. And by the way, we are finding out this morning that, even police didn't go into the school, right? I mean, this shooter was in that school for upwards of an hour, Kevin. And so this whole narrative that we have heard of, we'll give the good guy the gun, right? And it's like, look, even if the trained good guys can't go in there, how are teachers supposed to protect these kids? How are kids supposed to protect themselves?
And Gemma, I am way out of my depth here. I'm not going to, you know, Monday morning quarterback what happened in Texas. I think that's unfair. And
absolutely,
you know what you don't know. And I know very little about this. I only hear what we're hearing right now. But I wonder if this has to be a case that brings some sort of review of best practices. I mean, that's natural. That should be natural. That when something this horrific happens, you look at how it unfolded and what can we take from this terrible chapter and try to learn from it. I don't know. Again, I wonder if this is an inflection point or if it's if it's going to be sort of forgotten until the next mass shooting in a school.
Right. And if it can honestly become a stop being partisan, right, Kevin, that we can, and I guess that's what we wait and see in our legislative session in January.
And as I was walking out the door this morning, I saw just a clip on CNN signs that maybe there's some bipartisan talks and progress at the federal level. I mean, you know, way early to put too much into that at this point, but maybe this is a different, maybe we're at a different point.
Yeah. So I know a lot of folks want to believe that the pandemic is behind us, but Kevin, COVID case numbers are telling a bit of a different story right now.
Well, yeah, they've ticked upward a little bit. I'm curious that it doesn't appear that it's increased in schools or in school-aged kids as schools are letting out for the summer. I mean, yeah, the increases, you know, we put it in perspective, the numbers we're seeing right now are very, very are small compared to what we saw during the Delta outbreak or the Omicron outbreak. But there's definitely an increase. There's been an increase in the percentage of tests that are coming back positive. Audrey, I know, follows this much more closely than I do, and, you know, is following the wastewater numbers. It does seem like it's an uptick, and I don't know how big an uptick we're looking at.
So, yeah, Audrey, you've been covering the pandemic from the very beginning. I mean, what are you seeing right now? Because, there is an uptick. Yes, we're seeing it in the wastewater. But as Kevin mentioned, I mean, it's not to the levels that we've seen other surges happen.
Yeah. So so what I look at now, I don't really look at case numbers anymore because so much of it is home testing. But I do watch the wastewater levels. The city of Boise has a good wastewater chart, although it doesn't update every single day. CDC also has a map of the U.S., which is kind of nice to be able to see what's happening in other regions. I've had friends get infected, and I look at the regions like, oh yeah, that's definitely a hot spot right now. But the reason the wastewater data is so helpful is because, as I say, poop doesn't lie. you shed virus in your stool, so it's going to be there whether you went in and got a test or not. So there are limitations to that data, though, because we don't know, how much people are shedding with this virus versus a previous variant. And really what's important to watch is the rate of change. So Right now, it's going up the same way that it's gone up in the past. Hopefully it plateaus, but that's not been the pattern that we've seen. So I don't know. It's really tough to know what's happening anymore because of, you know, some of the data points are just not reliable anymore. The case numbers have never been totally reliable, but now, you know, positivity rates are giving a better indication of community spread, and we're getting close. You know, we're over 5% now, for statewide and then Ada County. And 5% is kind of the cutoff where you have adequate testing happening and people are catching cases and letting their contacts know and things like that. So we're past that point now. But you know, I'm seeing more people wearing masks than like a month ago. And we certainly have more treatments. We're not seeing people ending up hospitalized at quite the same rate.
The latest numbers, Gemma, I just called them up on those positivity rates that Audrey mentioned. We're at 7.6% statewide in the last round of numbers. And that's up from 5.5% the previous week. So to Audrey's point, yeah, that's definitely on an uptick.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when week to week like that. Nate, I want to turn again to Eastern Idaho. Talk to us about this investigation of a feedlot. And this is in regards to animal conditions.
Yeah, this was kind of a weird case. We had a animal rights activist group from Florida come up, and he did this sort of undercover investigation. He went to this feedlot and he recorded a bunch of clearly unsanitary conditions, clear animal abuse. I mean, he had video of animals being skinned alive, animals being cut into and essentially butchered while they were alive. And it was really, really horrific. And they gave that video to the authorities, and the authorities launched an investigation. It's right now under investigation by our sheriff's department, the Bonneville County Sheriff's Department, and by the Idaho State Department of Agriculture. But the weird thing about it was 2 days after the investigation started, there was a huge fire at the feedlot. And they haven't been able to determine a cause yet, but the investigation remains open, and there does look, at least according to these videos, like there's some clear abuse.
Is the feedlot still running at this
point,
Nate?
It is. Okay. Right now, the sheriff's department is saying until the sheriff's is saying they can't really do anything until the Idaho State Department of Agriculture finishes their investigation.
Okay. So, Kevin, I know that for a lot of kids, summer break is officially here, but still a lot to talk about in regards to education. So I want to start specifically with teacher pay, because in this last legislative session, teachers are supposed to be getting fairly decent raises, but doesn't seem it's that simple.
Nothing is that simple when it comes to education
ever.
Funding and when it comes to teacher salaries. Here's the short version of it. So the legislature did put $104 million of new money into teacher salaries, and that translates to a 10% increase in the pool of money that's available for salaries. And, you know, as I've written before, what that means is the teachers may be looking at raises in the 10% range, but a lot changes and a lot can vary from district to district. So what I tried to do this week was look at what's happening in some of the districts that have settled and some that are in the process of trying to settle. West Ada has a settlement and the average teacher salary increase is 6.2%. Boise settled just yesterday and the average base pay increase is 4.5%. Now you're wondering, okay, now how do we get from 6.2% in West Ada to 10%, or in Boise, 4.5% to 10%. A big chunk of what's going on here, Gemma, is that, well, a big chunk of the money that we're talking about that was put into teacher pay is federal money. It's from that coronavirus aid that came in, that big influx of federal money that came in. But that's all one-time money. And school districts are wisely reluctant to use that kind of one-time money and fold it into the pay scale and fold it into the pot of money for salaries, because, well, what happens when the money's gone? I mean, it's like making your house payment with money out of savings. It just doesn't work long term. So what a lot of these districts are doing, West Ada, for example, I think Boise's agreement has some one-time money too. Teachers will see stipends. They'll see bonuses along the way. They'll see one-time money, which will increase, their bottom line at least one time, at least for this one year.
Okay. But then I guess the question is, what happens then the following year, Kevin? I mean, we're not going to necessarily have that big influx of money yet. At the same time, we did end the legislative session with what, a $1.9 billion surplus.
Right. So, what you're going to see, like with West Ada, the 6.2% increase, that's in the base. So it's what will be looked at the next round of negotiations next spring, when school officials and the union get back together to look at, well, what did the legislature do this year? And what do we have available this year? That money, that increase, that pay increase is part of the base. So, we'll see. But, while some districts have settled pretty quickly, I mean, West Ada settled in one negotiating session, Nampa, it's taken a little bit longer time. And I talked to the union president in Nampa, and he says, well, the numbers, they're better than we've seen, but it's not close to 10%. And yeah, there's going to be a letdown. There are folks in our district who were expecting more. And it's part of our job now is to kind of say, well, here's the situation. Here's what to expect. Here's how it works. So I think there's a lot of confusion, and maybe in some cases there's going to be some disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Audrey, when we talk about this federal COVID aid that people saw, we've seen bankruptcies slow down in Idaho quite a bit, right? But you just recently wrote an article about this, and it may not be as good as it seems.
Well, like Kevin said, some of this federal aid was one time. The CARES Act, we have had quite an infusion of different federal aid programs over the past couple of years. Low interest rates, the pause on student loan repayments, and enhanced unemployment. So there's been a lot of money flowing to people that, according to the attorneys that I talked with, probably helped people make, home payments and buy food, and they spent it on utilities. And we know largely from various reports that mostly people were just using that money to live. So we've seen a big, big drop in bankruptcy filings. We were already kind of at a lower or a plateau level, but it was over 3,000. And last year, 2021, it barely cracked 2,000. It was 2,001 filings. And as of April of this year, 559. So we're on track for something like a 70% drop over the past few years. But that aid is running out. And some of the leading indicators for how people are doing financially and whether bankruptcies and foreclosures are kind of going to be on the way are credit card defaults and student loan defaults. Of course, student loan payments are not required right now, so that doesn't, that's not really an indicator right now, but credit card defaults, people missing payments, those are ticking up. And so some of the attorneys I talked with said, we think that we're going to head back into a period where people are going to be showing the financial strain in the courts by filing for bankruptcy. And in fact, one of the attorneys who does bankruptcies that I talked with said we might be seeing kind of not pent up demand, but like pent up case filings for people who were just on the edge the past few years. And now those benefits are running out.
Okay. So, Kevin.
So good and bad news.
So good. Yeah. Good and bad news, right? Yeah, exactly. So, Kevin, let's head back to education for a moment, because there has been for years a push to get full day kindergarten throughout the state of Idaho. This legislative session, the we now have the funding for that. The Boise School District, West Ada, are now offering full day kindergarten. Yet at the same time, they're still offering a half day for folks that want it. But what's going on with that? Because it seems to not be as popular of an option.
Right. So, fast forward back to where we started earlier this year. The legislature put a lot of money into literacy, $46 million new money into literacy, with the idea that it could be used if districts wanted for all-day kindergarten. Boise is going into all-day kindergarten. Actually, they decided to do this even before the legislature acted. And then West Ada, right after the legislature passed that increase in funding. So now you have all-day kindergarten available, but you do have some parents who have asked for the half-day option. Really not that many. Boise is going to offer half-day kindergarten only in one school. It's Liberty Elementary School. It's on the southeast corner of town. Boise is saying, look, we only had about 20 or so parents express an interest in half-day kindergarten, and many of them are in southeast Boise anyway, so we'll just have it in the one school. West Ada is still trying to figure out how many schools might have a half-day option. Yeah. This is the wave of kindergarten right now, the movement towards all-day kindergarten, and it's been going on for years. What you're seeing in Boise and West Ada, evidently most parents are on board with the idea of all-day kindergarten. They want to take advantage of this new opportunity that's being provided. Mm-hmm. And a quick plug, I should mention, my podcast, which is just dropped earlier today, I talked to Beth Oppenheimer of the Association for the Education of Young Children. We talk at some length about all-day kindergarten and how that changes the landscape in early education. So, quick plug.
Well, and I think what's interesting, Kevin, is that, I think for a lot of parents, in particular, working parents, is that your children go to preschool, right? And that is all day. And this is something that my now, soon to be ninth grader, when we were looking at where to send him for kindergarten, he was in full-day preschool. The only options at the time, in the public school system, and I'm so glad this has changed, was that it was half day. So these kids would then have to go half day to kindergarten and then be bused back to where they went to preschool. And it's just so complicated, right? I think that's the thing. There's no continuity with that. So now having the option of full day kindergarten all over, I think is appealing for so many parents.
Well, I think you mentioned how widespread will all-day kindergarten be? That's a really good question that I don't really have the answer to yet. I think that's something that we'll want to dig into as we head into the new school year. How many school districts jumped in and decided to offer all-day kindergarten? How many are doing an all-day and half-day option like we're seeing in Boise and West Ada? It's not required. I mean, some districts may decide to put that literacy money into other programs to try to help kids learn to read. So, yeah, that's a good idea for a story that we should be doing here in the next few months. How widespread is all-day kindergarten?
Yeah, yeah. So, Nate, we have just about 2 minutes left, and I quickly want to talk about these grizzly bears having to be put down in Island Park recently.
Yeah, in the last week or so, we've had about 5, including a couple cubs, that have had to be put down in Island Park. It's essentially that they're being conditioned and habituated to human food sources. People are not putting their trash in bear-safe dumpsters. And because of that, we're losing some grizzly bears.
Yeah, and especially as we get into the summer season, for people to be aware of that when they're camping and things like that. Absolutely. I want to thank all of you for your time today as we head into the holiday weekend. Our thanks to Kevin Richer, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, Audrey Dutton, senior investigative reporter with the Idaho Capital Sun, and Nate Sunderland, managing editor of eastidahonews.com. Thank you all so much, and I hope you guys have a great holiday weekend.
Have a good weekend, Gemma.
And coming up on Tuesday on Idaho Matters, because we will play a special for Memorial Day on Monday. So on Tuesday, raptors all around the world, they're in trouble, especially vultures. The populations of these birds, it's actually dropping at a really alarming rate. We're going to find out more about these vultures and why they're in trouble. That's Tuesday at noon on Idaho Matters. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today and for being a part of Idaho Matters and a part of Boise State Public Radio News. Thank you so much for tuning in and for supporting us. Our senior producer is Samantha Wright. Our assistant producer is Hannah Gardosky. Our theme music was written and produced by Boise musician Will Hall. Do you have a question or a comment? Maybe you have an idea for a show. Well, if you do, we would love to hear from you. IdahoMatters@boisestate.edu. Our executive producers are Paul Stribling and Tom Michael. I'm Gemma Gaudet. It is Friday of Memorial Day weekend. I hope you can find some joy in your weekend. We will see you back here next week.